May it please the court. My name is Patrick McSweeney, representing the appellants Gloss and Fox. We put on evidence at a hearing, a lengthy hearing, at which we called all five of the board members who attended a meeting that was held without public notice or even notice to three members of the board who, in fact, did not attend. By any stretch, we met the requirements of Section 2.2-3701, which defines what a meeting is. Under the plain meaning doctrine, no additional requirements can be added beyond what the General Assembly has imposed, and it shows its words, obviously.
Well, counsel, assume you make a prima facie showing of a meeting. Who has the burden of demonstrating whether one of the two exceptions, either subsection A or subsection B, applies?
Well, we'll take that burden on, and I'll explain how we met that burden. Under the terms of the first modifier, the General Assembly has chosen the word attendance, not participation. Five members attended. Now, we went beyond that at trial, and we showed that they did, in fact, participate. But there's a reason why attendance is the word chosen by the General Assembly. If there's a meeting without a recording, without the public attending, it is unreasonable to expect a petitioner to establish what happened through the words, through the testimony of people who are reluctant to testify to a violation of FOIA. That's what happened here. Much of the day was taken at the hearing, drawing evidence out of the people who attended, when I don't think under the terms of the statute it was necessary to do so, because the word attendance means attend, not participate. All three of the meetings that day, there was a meeting the chairman had with the police chief and his deputy before the meeting at issue. There was a meeting after that second meeting where the five members participated or attended, which was an emergency meeting of the board. All three meetings involved public business, and that business was something in May of 2020, which was obviously, even in the words of one of the board members who attended the second meeting,
Council,
was a crisis in the county.
Does it matter which body calls the meeting? If the sheriff's department calls a meeting and the council is there to gather information or to listen to what is transpiring, is it a meeting of the council?
There's no requirement in the code that meetings are called by a member of the board. It can be called by the county executive. In fact, it doesn't have to be a formal call. Any gathering or any attendance where a discussion occurs about public business
is
a meeting under the definition and under the modifier.
Assume the same set of facts with the following changes. No county employee is involved in the organization or decision to have a meeting. Purely community activists discuss issues of public concern. No member of the public body, multiple members of the body show up, but none speak, none are recognized, and none direct any are participants in anything other than listening. Could that be a public forum which they're allowed to attend under subsection B?
Well, let me see. First of all, it does not meet the definition of public forum, but it is not the situation we have here where it was called by a member, by the police chief. But I understand your question.
Mine's a hypothetical.
A public forum is further defined to inform the electorate. It cannot be a public forum if the public is not notified of the meeting. It was a private meeting.
Pre-selected. Well, there were 60 people in the room. And so at some point, doesn't that become a public forum in
no.
a public space that's open to the public?
It's not open to the public. The requirement is to give public notice. If open to the public is a substitute for giving public notice, then you modify the code.
How is that public notice required to be given?
The requirement is to post it on the website, give notice to all the members of the board.
On the website?
The county website.
But that's for something that qualifies as a public meeting, clearly. But something that is a candidate appearance, a debate, or a public forum, by definition, doesn't need all of those niceties, correct?
There is no distinction between meeting and public meeting in the code. It's a meeting or gathering.
But there is a distinction between a meeting and public forum.
And public forum is to inform the electorate. And the electorate is not a group that is pre-selected and limited to the minority community, which is defined, which was clearly the purpose of the police chief in calling this meeting.
So if the public, is it your position that it is not a public forum unless every member of the electorate is notified in some form or fashion? I mean, that seems pretty extreme.
That's the electorate. This was not to inform the electorate.
Was the public ever invited?
No.
So you lost this on a motion to strike, is that right?
That's correct.
After the end of your case in chief?
That's correct.
So we have a judge, trial judge, saying as a matter of law, you lose. And part of your argument is as a matter of law, you win. But isn't the right answer under your best theory, the motion to strike was totally impermissible. We should go to a full trial and the trial judge should analyze the facts as a fact finder, not as a sufficiency determinant.
There are two issues presented here. One is as a matter of law, and the other is on the evidence adduced at that hearing, the circuit judge was wrong.
Well, it's an easy argument to make. He was wrong in not make fact-finding. You don't make fact-finding on a motion to strike, as you know. You just ask yourself hypothetically, if all these facts were absolutely true, does he still lose? Isn't that the proper result under your theory? We send it back down for trial and say, you know, Judge, you've got to own it. You've got to make facts. You've got to decide some of these nuances that we were asking about. But you didn't do that. That's what a motion to strike is not designed to do.
His motion to strike was based on his conclusion that there was no evidence that members of the board participated. It's wrong for two reasons. We showed by the testimony of the board members themselves, they did participate in the conversation and the discussion.
So if the trial judge had accepted those facts as a given and not questioned it or analyzed the significance of it, it would have passed through a motion to strike and the defendants could put on their case in chief if they wanted to, and then an ultimate decision by the fact finder. So isn't that where this case should go under your theory?
No, but it's a matter of law, a point that I made earlier. The word attendance does not require the petitioner to prove anything else. Five members attended. There was no public notice, and public business was discussed. That's what the statute says. That's the modifier.
Counsel, I come back to the Sheriff's Department. It seems that perhaps there was a meeting, but do you have the right party? It seems that the Sheriff's Department may have called a meeting. Members of the council showed up. But I don't see where they called a meeting.
They don't have to call the meeting. Okay. There's no requirement in the code. The requirements of the statute are...
But is there a difference between showing up at a meeting where another public official has called a meeting to gather information? Does that turn into them being in a meeting? To there being a meeting?
Assumes it's about gathering information. Let's suppose five members showed up in the sheriff's office with the chairman at her prearranged meeting before that larger meeting. That would have been a clear violation of 3701, a clear violation. It doesn't matter who calls the meeting. If five members show up and they are there to express their opposition, which they all testified was the case, they were not there to gather information. They were there to complain about law enforcement's activities the night before. This was not information gathering. And that was the very point of their showing up, to demonstrate, because they knew there was an emergency meeting immediately following that private meeting.
How could they have known that when my understanding is that that meeting wasn't scheduled until after this meeting had began?
It doesn't matter. You're on under your decision in, forget the case, forgive me. The only requirement is whether it is likely to be a matter taken up by the board. This issue was one that was obviously going to come before the board. It was obviously going to come before the board because they were interacting with the police chief the night before in multiple emails. They set up a meeting. There were complaints. One of the board members notified the sheriff or his deputy multiple times on Saturday night. They were there at the meeting to complain about the use of tear gas and other tactics used at the riot. That was the purpose.
We haven't talked yet about the policy of FOIA and the statutory presumption in favor of a very liberal expansion of the range of options when you're looking at it. So does that play a role in your argument?
It does, Your Honor. The various, if you're speaking of 3700.
Where there's doubt, where there's reasonable doubt as to what's going on, the statute favors open government. And if we're sitting around parsing out very fine details, perhaps the thumb should be on the scale towards open government.
It begins with people have a free entry to meetings of the public wherein business of the people is being discussed. Unless there's an exception, every meeting shall be open to the public. This was not open to the public. The fact that a door was not locked and it was in a public building does not mean it was open to the public. It was not a public forum because only a pre-selected group attended that meeting. There was no argument about that. If I may reserve the final 3 minutes, Your Honor.
All right.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Gifford Hampshire with the firm of Blankenship and Keith, and I represent the appellees. I represented Supervisor Franklin below, and I'm here on behalf of all appellees today. I must tell the court that Mr. Bynum, who represented Supervisors Bodie, Angry, and Bailey, wanted to be here today, but he has COVID, unfortunately. And we are also joined today by a representative of Chair Wheeler, who is in the audience, who happens to be my son, Gifford V. Hampshire, who's a new member of the bar. So I introduce him to the court. May it please the court, this court comes to the court based upon the trial court's granting of a motion to strike, based upon a finding which is found on page 350 of the joint appendix. And that finding was members did not discuss county policy or any public business that I can see there.
Counsel.
Yes, sir.
And on brief, you said that we're bound by the circuit court's findings of fact. If the circuit court found a fact, isn't that impermissible at the motion to strike stage and is definitionally reversible error?
I take your point, Your Honor. And I heard Justice Kelsey's question a second ago, and I do appreciate that point. And I think if I had to do that brief over again, I would say that the totality of the evidence that the trial court looked at did not amount to a meeting.
But totality is a weighing of evidence, and that's improper at this stage, is it not?
I think that on a motion to strike, a trial court can look at what the evidence has been presented in the light most favorably to the moving party, to the plaintiff, the petitioners in this case, and based upon that determination, make a determination, which is the whole purpose of a motion to strike, that the evidence does not show what is necessary to make the case, which is it was a meeting.
Under your reading of the statute, who bears the burden of establishing once there is evidence that there has been a meeting as defined by the statute, that either the exceptions in subsection A or subsection B apply?
Yes, sir. I think it's important to recognize that we are not talking about an exclusion here under 3713 subsection E, where the burden to prove an exclusion is upon the governing body. What we are talking about is whether the conduct falls within the act at all in the first place. And that, and specifically whether or not this was a meeting in the first place.
But the point's still the same. We're to, by statute, we're to liberally construe the scope of FOIA, not only restrictively construe the scope of restrictions and limitations and exceptions, but to liberally construe the scope. It's a very powerful statement. We don't see it in that many statutes.
Right.
So isn't that, this may be simplistic to you, but doesn't that mean, in essence, where there's a really tough judgment call and reasonable people could go either way, we put the thumb on the scale in favor of open government? Yes, what's the harm in doing that?
Yes, sir. I think, and your point is well taken, Justice Kelsey, but we are dealing with a plain language of the statute in this case, and what is a meeting?
Well, does a meeting have to be called by the legislative body members? That's the first question, and I don't see it in the statute
anywhere. And we're not contending it does.
So what difference does it make whether the sheriff called it or I called it?
Well, it doesn't make a difference either way, I would say, Justice Kelsey, because if you look at the definition of meeting, what is relevant is not who calls the meeting. I agree with you there. What is relevant is whether the public business of that governing body is discussed or
the
transacted.
The sheriff's talking with a bunch of members from the county board about a pretty serious thing that affects the whole public. That's not public business?
Not in this case, Your Honor, and this is why.
Was what was discussed at the 4 o'clock meeting public business?
Yes, it was.
Well, isn't there testimony from all the board members who testified that substantively the same things were discussed at both meetings?
No, exactly.
Viewed in the light most favorable to petitioners.
Exactly the opposite, Your Honor, with respect. The evidence showed, and if you look at the joint appendix at JA, the exhibit was AW5 JA371, and that is the email from the county executive to the clerk as to, and that is advertising, directing pursuant to the Chair Wheeler's directive earlier that afternoon, just about a half hour earlier. The direction is not only with respect to what happened in the riots the night before, but also, quote, what we can do to allow and help ensure that the future, we're talking about the future demonstrations because everyone was concerned there would be more, occur safely and peacefully.
But,
and then,
but at 165 of the appendix, Supervisor Bailey says, in effect, the same subjects were discussed at both meetings. At page 200, Supervisor Boddy says that the same subjects were discussed at both meetings. At 209, Supervisor Angry says the same subjects were discussed at both meetings. And at 258, Supervisor Franklin says the same subjects were discussed at both meetings. Given that and the standard of review we are to apply, if it was public business at 4, isn't it definitionally public business at 1?
No, sir, because there are other elements in the transcript I'd ask you to look at, and that is...
But I'm not supposed to do that. You're asking me to weigh and compare conflicting evidence. They're entitled to every inference at this stage, are they not?
Well, Your Honor, I understand your question to be, were the subjects the same, and was there testimony that the subjects were the same? And I relied upon the AW5 and AW6, which advertised a different subject, which namely was the discussion of how the county board, not the police department, but how the county board can legislate something that would ensure safely and peacefully the conduct of the future demonstrations, which were contemplated at that point.
Would a Board of Supervisors member asking a member of the police force to include something in an after-action report be public business?
No, sir.
Why not?
Well, number one, in this case, Supervisor Boddy did not ask that. Well, the record shows that he asked, would the state police be involved in that after-action report? But assuming you're hypothetical, I think asking for information, clearly under this case, of course, precedents in Najat and also in Beck versus Sheldon, the asking of information and the receipt of information is not the discussion of public business.
But if there was a request to include something in the report, if there was testimony that a supervisor specifically said, and will that be included in the report, and got the answer yes, why isn't that public business?
Because I think that it depends upon whether there was a request to prepare the report in the first place, whether that was a request by a member of the county board that thou shalt prepare a report. In this case, the evidence was that the report was being prepared. The only question was going to be, which was asked by Supervisor Bodie, was, will the state police have any role in that?
And such fine distinctions to me. I mean, how is this whole discussion not the public business? I mean, this was a major public issue at the time. And well, law enforcement was involved. Every politician you can think of was showing up having something to say on the subject.
Yes, sir.
And there's this meeting, couple of meetings, with apparently a subset of people that wasn't advertised to the public at large.
Yes, sir. And I think one needs to look at the distinction in the Virginia Code, and we find this in 37 subsection E about public matters, the distinction between matters of interest to the public, which this certainly was. It was a major event. The riots were occurring in Prince William County. Tear gas was, or chemical agents were being used. It was being talked about.
Matters of interest to the public with public officials there is not public business?
It's a matter of public interest until it gets on the board agenda and becomes a matter of discussion of policy or preparation for action.
But that could only happen at a formally called meeting, which would gut the entire statute.
Well, if you look at the policy in 37E, it recognizes that there are events that members of the public organize, and even agencies of the county government organize, which relate to matters of public interest. What the statute attempts to prevent, Your Honor, is the discussion of policy and the preparation of action, because it would defeat the whole purpose of being a public official if a public official, an elected official, could not attend matters of public interest, churches, chambers of commerce, others, entities.
And subsection B sets forth three categories.
Yes, sir.
Debate, candidate appearance, public forum. I think it's pretty clear, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that you don't contend this was a debate and you don't contend this was a candidate appearance.
That's right.
Why is it a public forum in your view?
Well, it's simply a public forum because it was a forum, a room, a place that was open to the public. Now, granted, not advertised, but it wasn't a closed meeting, and people heard about it by word of mouth, because they were interested in what happened the night before, only hours before. Keep in mind the compressed time frame here.
But isn't it a little anomalous that only some members of the county board showed up and other members had no idea what was going on? Doesn't that imply something?
It implies that what the police department was doing was reaching out to the affected community.
Okay, so a subset of the public gets this meeting, but the whole public is not allowed to know about it. Does that make any sense under FOIA?
Yes, sir, it does, because what is proscribed under FOIA is the discussion and transaction of the business of the public body, the business of the public body. And the Attorney General since 1985, and has never been corrected by this court or the General Assembly, has said that the business of the public body is the deliberation and the transaction of policy, basically. Government could not function, and politicians could not do their jobs if they could not attend events held at even county agencies where matters of public interest are discussed, as long as they don't deliberate county policy, they don't issue directives. And in this case, none of that happened. The supervisor.
Mr. Hampshire, sir,
yes, sir,
if I could, and following up, I think, on a theme that was suggested by Justice Kelsey to appellant's counsel, why ultimately is this not a Cater Court problem? And Justice Compton was exasperated at the time with trial judges short-circuiting litigation. This was on a motion to strike. And especially given what Justice Russell was talking about in terms of weighing competing facts, why not just have the whole trial? Would you not then be in a better position had that happened?
Well, I grant Justice Mann that that would be a safer thing for a trial judge to do, but motions to strike exist for a reason. And there are cases, they wouldn't exist if there weren't cases where they are justified. And in this case, It was the burden of the moving party to prove that this was a meeting as defined by the Virginia Freedom of Information Act.
No, it wasn't to prove it. It was to present facts that a reasonable fact finder could accept as proof.
Yes, sir.
Very different conceptually.
All right. Well, I take your point. But that was the standard, and that and the facts completely failed in that regard.
Assume for me it's a citizens advisory board called meeting along with the police chief, where issues of police use of force, property damage, riots, chemical agents were discussed, and that at least one board member requests that the police include specific information in an after-action report and makes inquiry as to when the report would be available. If all of that is true and is accepted as true, does that constitute a public meeting where public business was discussed?
If, I think under those facts, which are different from what we have here with respect to the testimony of Supervisor Bodie, it could be if the matter was on the agenda of the Board of Supervisors at the time.
So as long as we wait until after we have a secret meeting to put what we discussed at the secret meeting on the agenda, it doesn't violate FOIA? That does not make any sense to me, but it seems to me that's what you're arguing.
Well, no, secret meeting is... respectfully, a bit of a loaded term, because the question is whether it is a meeting in the first place. And we have the language of the statute, and we have two subparts. We have not only the public forum subpart, but we have the subsection A, where no purpose of the assemblage is the discussion of public business, not just anything under the sun, public business, and it was not prearranged for that purpose.
No, it's or it was prearranged, not and. That's a big that's a significant difference, isn't it?
No part of the purpose of the gathering is the discussion or transaction of any public business, and such gathering in attendance it was not called or prearranged. So you have to have both to show that it's not a meeting.
Right.
And in this case, the proof put on by the moving party was that neither was the case. It was not called or prearranged to discuss any public business that was on the agenda of the Board of Supervisors, and nor was it prearranged,
Why does it have to be on the agenda?
Because that is the definition of public business. Public business is not just under 3701. It is the legislative body, board, commission, or agency of the Commonwealth, subdivision of the Commonwealth. It's not the police department.
So it has to be on the agenda?
It needs to be in the agenda, and your Beck versus Sheldon case said, or is likely to be on the agenda in the future, but I urge you to look at your decision in Beck versus Sheldon. Very different set of circumstances.
Well, it doesn't need to be on the agenda under Beck. It's a subject matter that could be, should be, might be on the agenda in the future.
That is a literal reading of Beck, and I urge the court to look at that case in that context when evaluating this case, because that was a very different. I see my time. I still have 36. That was a very different set of circumstances there. What happened there, as you may recall, is that there was an assemblage of citizens at a stop sign in the city of Fredericksburg. And two or three or more members of the city council showed up, and they discussed about the concern that there was no adequate stop control there at that intersection. And this court held that in that context, upholding the trial court's finding that there was no meeting, ruling that there was no meeting, said that there was nothing, that there was no public business discussed, and all that the council members did was to receive information and to ask clarifying questions.
Fair enough. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the court's time.
Thank you. You have 1 minute and 27 seconds. I'm sorry, 2 minutes and 5 seconds.
Thank you. Let me return to the question about public forum. Mr. Hampshire talked about the people affected, the affected community. The affected community included the property owners who were affected by the riot the night before. It included at least three members of the board who were not invited. You cannot have a narrow group reflecting one point of view and call it a public forum.
Is that true? I mean, so if the Rorchins have a meeting and somebody comes to it, it's not a public forum. If they just say, we're going to have a meeting, anybody wants to can come. It's not a public forum unless they post it on a bulletin board or something?
Yeah, by any definition of public forum, it means there is some outreach, some notification of the general public, not just a pre-selected group. Three members were excluded. Property owners were excluded. This was a very important issue at the time.
When you talk about excluding, it seems like to me failure to notify and excluding are two different things. Because given your definition, any meeting that a public official might go to with any group would not be a public forum unless there's a public notice that the meeting is going to take place.
No, that's not what I'm saying. This was not an information gathering meeting. This was a meeting at which the five.
Well, we're talking about two different things, because right now we're talking about public forum and the definition of what is a public forum, right, as opposed to whether it was for purposes of information gathering. So I'm just trying to deal with the definition of public forum, and it seems like to me you're telling me nothing is a public forum unless there's a public notice just on a bulletin board or posted at the courthouse or something.
No, that's not the dichotomy. I'm suggesting when you deliberately exclude an important affected part of the community.
How do you deliberately exclude people by not?
By the method chosen to have this meeting. The police chief asked the chairman of the Citizen Advisory Board, which is a branch of, which is a board set up by the police department, to make invitations to the meeting. Now, by word of mouth, it went to a very select group. It didn't go to the three members of the board who didn't attend. It didn't go to the property owners. This was a narrowly defined meeting. The fact that the door was not locked does not make it a public forum.
Well, assume a federal official had wanted to communicate regarding the events of the night before and had come and had used its donor list, used his or her donor list, invited people off the donor list to a, quote, public forum to discuss this, and five board members show up because they got the invitation. Could that be a public
forum? The statute says to inform the electorate, and the electorate means it has to be broadly available to everyone. Now, it may be, that's a different set of facts, but if it's off someone's donor list, I don't think that's a public forum.
Does a political convention inform the electorate?
No, not necessarily.
But it could.
It could, but it's not a public forum. In fact, by definition, it excludes people who are not members of the party. That's a far different set of facts. But Mr. Hampshire used the term, you have to prove there was deliberation. The statute doesn't say that. The statute says attend where there is a discussion of public business. If this is not public business, I don't know what is.
What about subsection B, which they talk about the gathering or attendance at a public forum, the purpose of which is not to transact public business, right? You know, not to transact public business as opposed to discussing public business.
Well, it may not be for transacting business, but if it's a discussion of public business, that meets the definition, and that's exactly what happened here. They were discussing public business, which was going to be on the board's agenda later, on the agenda of the next meeting, the emergency meeting at 4 o'clock.
It's hard to imagine riots would not be on the board's agenda in the near future.
Well, it's not about being on the agenda because subsection B doesn't talk about whether or not it's discussed. It talks about whether or not the purpose of the meeting is to transact business.
Or to hold discussions.
Or to hold discussion, and
no,
that's what happened.
I'm looking at 22307. Subsection B, it says the gathering or attendance of two or more members of a public body at a public forum, the purpose of which is to inform the electorate and not to transact public business or to hold meetings relating to the transaction of public business.
It does relate. It relates to the transaction of public business. It doesn't say transaction of public business. It relates to the transaction of public business, which was going to occur when the board took up the use of force, the use of tear gas and flashbangs and other things that were complained about at the meeting at 1 o'clock. For 3 hours, there was not an information gathering. There was complaint after complaint about how the police had responded to that riot the night before. That's what this was about. And that's why the three members and property owners were excluded from that meeting. And that's not what the FOIA was designed to open things in just this kind of situation, where there's an important discussion of public policy, and there's no question this was policy. The policy of using force, the policy of using tear gas, this was an important issue that affected everybody in Prince William County. But there were only a handful of people who were notified about this meeting to discuss that important issue. That's why it's not a public forum. It was a meeting by any definition, by the definition in 3701.
Counsel,
three or more.
Your time's up.
I beg your pardon. Thank you.
That's okay. Thank you very much. Please call the next case.